This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Dangerous Personalities, written by Joe Navarro and Tony Sciarra-Pointer, narrated by Stephen Hoy. Forward. When my good friend and colleague Joe Navarro completed the first draft of this book, he asked if I would review the manuscript and make some constructive comments where appropriate. Once I picked up the book and started to read it, I could not put it down. It is without question one of the most interesting, useful, and user-friendly books I have ever read on this subject. Although numerous academic studies have been conducted in the analysis of dangerous personalities, Joe has made a conscious decision not to load this book with social science jargon or with elaborate statistical analysis. He does, however, make it clear to the reader that his discussions and conclusions about these individuals are well-founded and based upon his many years of experience as an FBI special agent and criminal profiler. One of the main questions that came to mind as I read this book was, who would find it both useful and interesting? I came to a one-word conclusion. Everyone. This is because all of us at some time in our lives will most certainly encounter one or more of these dangerous personalities. In some cases, they may be family members, people we are dating or intending to marry, intimate or casual friends or professional associates. This book is valuable because it will help readers to understand that when they are dealing with one of these dangerous personalities, even casually, there is a good chance they will be victimized. These individuals are so flawed and callous that they can make us feel as though we are responsible for the suffering they cause, while they remain impervious to modifying or changing their toxic behavior. If this book is carefully read, it will go a long way in accomplishing a number of objectives. First, it will assist readers in recognizing dangerous personalities and preventing them from entering their lives in the first place. Second, it will provide readers with specific suggestions on how to most effectively deal with such individuals if they must. Third, and most important, the admonition set forth in this book, if adhered to, may save one's life or at the very least prevent someone from being seriously injured, mentally, physically, or financially. As a former homicide detective and still active criminologist, I have personally witnessed the havoc these dangerous personalities inflict on innocent victims. They murder, rape, assault, steal, bully, and exploit anyone who falls within their sphere of influence and control. Based on my many years of law enforcement experience, as well as on my own extensive research as a criminologist, I feel confident in saying that chances are someone with a dangerous personality will come into your life or the life of someone you love. While vigilance is helpful, vigilance coupled with knowledge is optimal for keeping us safe. I can confidently say that Joe Navarro has written a remarkable book that fulfills that purpose. Dr. Leonard Torito, Distinguished Professor of Criminal Justice, St. Leo University, St. Leo, Florida, and Professor Emeritus, Department of Criminology, University of South Florida, Tampa. Introduction. Why I wrote this book and how to use it. On June 27, 1975, a young woman named Susan Sue Curtis went missing from an otherwise very safe college campus. She was 15 years old and attending a youth conference at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah, where I was a rookie police officer. I conducted the initial investigation into her disappearance. We interviewed friends and family for clues and learned that she'd gone back to her room to clean her new braces. But when I searched her room, her toothbrush was dry. She had never made it back. We could account for some of her activity. Her lunch ticket had been used, but we were limited in what we could reconstruct. This was before cameras were ubiquitous on campuses, and cell phones kept us all connected. We talked with her family. I still remember their fathomless pain and desperation. Their trauma was devastating and sad. so sad. Sue was never found, and eventually all reasonable leads were exhausted. But the mystery of her disappearance always bothered me because I had been on duty that night, patrolling the campus, and somehow felt partially responsible. I kept a copy of the case file containing a large photograph of her, and for years afterward I would scan crowds, looking for a face that even remotely resembled hers. I kept the file, too, to remind me of my failure to protect that innocent soul. Years passed, and I went on to become an FBI agent. Then one day I got a call from a Salt Lake City investigator. "There's something you should know," he told me. "We never found Sue Curtis, but we know who took her." He went on to say that a good-looking young man had been driving around campus in a Volkswagen that night looking for a victim. That man had finally admitted to kidnapping and killing Sue Curtis. His name was Theodore Ted Bundy, a man who eventually would confess to the murder of 35 young women in 4 different states. It's still hard to think about the almond-eyed girl with long hair, whose photo I looked at day after day, whose diary I read, whose clothing I smelled for signs of where she might have been, whose shoes I felt for moisture or dirt, as I desperately looked for any possible clue to her whereabouts. It's very possible that I had seen her killer that night driving about on campus. I would have looked twice at his car for not having a BYU student or faculty sticker, but many didn't that day, as there were so many visitors on campus. No illegal activity was seen or reported. It was like any other day, except that on this day there was a dangerous personality on campus. A predator and serial killer who would go on to kill many times more. BYU is one of the safest campuses in the country, yet there had been an abduction and a life taken. How had this happened, and who would do such a thing? The realization that one person can do so much damage, not just to victims, but also to their loved ones, was chilling. I was all of 22, a police officer in uniform, when I first truly understood that there are dangerous personalities on this planet, and that because of them we can never be completely safe. I shudder to think what Sue Curtis, all of 15, was made to understand that night, alone with a predator, before she died. I am convinced that this singular event drove me years later to serve as a criminal profiler in the Tampa Division of the FBI, and later in the FBI's elite National Security Division Behavioral Analysis Program. I felt compelled to understand criminal and abnormal behavior, and this objective dominated much of my bureau career. Sue Curtis disappeared on my watch. Those were my words and initials on that investigative report. That tragic event drove my passion to seek answers from those who knew best, the criminals themselves, and their victims. What I learned from them, over a period of 4 decades, is that there are certain personalities who hurt people the most. Over and over, they are responsible for crime, for torment, for misery, for financial losses, as well as for loss of life. This book is about those dangerous personalities that cause us so much pain and suffering. What I learned about criminals, abnormal behavior, and dangerous personalities, you should know also, because it may save your life. The Reality of Dangerous Personalities. By now we're familiar with the grim headline, "Lone Killer Walks into an Office Building, Classroom, Campground, or Other Area, and seemingly without provocation opens up with an assault rifle or other weapons, killing or maiming scores of innocent victims. After each of these events, after the mayhem is over and the victims are buried or patched up, the latter no doubt traumatized for life, as are their families, the question is asked, who could do something like this, and could it have been prevented? When these violent events happen, they dominate the news and preoccupy us for months. The massacres at Virginia Tech, at Columbine High School and Sandy Hook Elementary School, and in Oslo, Norway, to name just a few. Unfortunately, these horrible mass killings happen all too often, In America alone, they occur on average 18 to 20 times per year. Coming at us with almost metronomic frequency, more than one per month, such events are almost numbing. How many were killed this time, we ask incredulously. Was it 8, 16, 26, or 77? As in Utøya, Norway, on July 22, 2011, at the hands of Anders Behring Breivik. Yet as staggering as these violent events are, they don't represent the full picture of who victimizes most people. The sad truth is that for every mass killer, there are hundreds more who kill one child at a time, one date at a time, or one spouse at a time. And these events sometimes barely make it to page 6 in major newspapers. The mayhem that occurs under the radar without making the national news is the kind of crime, torment, and suffering many of us are more likely to experience. The dangerous personalities among us harm us behind closed doors, at home, at church, at school, and in the office, often preying in secrecy on the unsuspecting or the trusting. And for the most part, no one finds out until it's too late. When they do make the headlines, it's on those rare occasions when they get caught. They are responsible for many of the nearly 15,000 homicides, 4.8 million domestic assaults, 2.2 million burglaries, 354,000 robberies, and 230,000 plus sexual assaults that occur annually in the United States, many of which go unreported and unpunished. Or, like Bernard Madoff, they may embezzle money from the elderly or even friends for years. On such a grand scale, in his case, that the economic well-being of thousands was compromised. They can go undisturbed for decades, destroying lives as convicted child rapist Jerry Sandusky did at Pennsylvania State University. Think back to those times in your own life when someone stole something from you or took hurtful advantage of you. Perhaps your house was burglarized or your car was broken into. Perhaps you dated someone who turned out to be toxic, or you were bullied at school or at work. Perhaps you've been assaulted, mugged, or sexually abused and never reported it, or if you did, nothing came of it. Much goes on around us that is never reported. And when it is, it's rare that those responsible are incarcerated. For 60 years, criminologists have known that fewer than 1% of criminals are ever incarcerated for their crimes. What this means for us is that most of the people who can hurt us, these dangerous personalities, will avoid official scrutiny, wreaking havoc in our lives without ever getting caught or persisting for years before they're stopped. And that's just physical harm. Not all wounds are physical. Most of the people who cause us harm will also do it emotionally, psychologically, or financially. They too are dangerous personalities because they put us at risk in their own way. How four dangerous personalities came together. While working for the FBI as a profiler, I began to see a pattern emerging as to the personality types who seemed to dominate our attention. These were people who were constantly making others miserable, breaking laws, engaging in risky behavior, taking advantage of or abusing others, and in general causing pain and suffering. Not once, not twice, but repeatedly. Through my own efforts and with the guidance of others, I learned that there are certain personalities who will always be nasty, who are deceitful and manipulative, who derive pleasure from taking advantage of others, and who don't respect people or laws. They are exhausting emotionally and can be cruel, callous, and exploitative. And they will repeat their behavior over and over without concern for the physical or psychological damage they inflict on others. From investigating, arresting, and talking to rapists, murderers, kidnappers, bank robbers, white-collar criminals, pedophiles, and terrorists, I learned, sometimes the hard way, that dangerous personalities can be very deceptive. They may look and act quite normal on the surface. They may even be intelligent, interesting, charming, and attractive, but they are always dangerous. In 1995, I met Kelly Therese Warren for the first time. 30 years old, she lived in Warner Robins, Georgia, with her daughter and husband. Kelly had served in the military, handling secretarial duties, and had been discharged honorably after serving her tour in Germany. Her husband worked at a lumber yard, and she did various odd jobs, including babysitting and working at a convenience store. Kelly always had a smile for me and would welcome me with a hug. What little food they had, she willingly shared, and she always made sure to top off my glass of sweetened iced tea. She talked to me more than a dozen times over a summer, always with a smile. Kelly told me what life had been like as a U.S. Army soldier stationed in Germany, and what it was like to grow up poor in the South. She was funny and cheerful and always quick to answer my questions and fill in the gaps. For nearly a year, she provided my FBI colleagues and me with information that we used to pursue a criminal, and not just a criminal, but a Soviet bloc spy. For a year, we followed Kelly's every word. Every bit of information she enthusiastically volunteered, we pursued. But something wasn't right. Nothing Kelly was telling us was panning out. It took a long time to figure out because most of the leads were in Europe, not in the United States. Finally, we were able to confront her with the facts. That's when we learned that not only had she lied, but that it was she who had placed her nation at risk. It was she who, in her mere 20s, at the height of the Cold War, had put all of Central Europe in danger by selling to the Soviet bloc highly classified war plans that she had typed. Kelly, with her sweet smile and sweet tea, was yet one more example of how dangerous personalities can be charming, funny, and interesting, but they can also put a whole nation, or in her case, a host of nations, at risk. Kelly is serving a 25-year sentence for committing espionage. These individuals are flawed, not only in personality but also in character, that is, in morality and ethics. In essence, they can't be trusted to tell you the truth, to care about and protect you, or to keep you safe. And because of their flaws, invariably their behavior leaves behind a debris field of human suffering. Over time, I came to realize that there were 4 personality types responsible for most of the harm we were seeing. These 4 dangerous personalities daily put us at risk, financially, emotionally, or physically, and they are the personalities we will focus on in this book. The narcissistic personality, the emotionally unstable personality, the paranoid personality, the predator. My intention. Dangerous personalities is my attempt to share with you what I know about those who will hurt you. Dangerous personalities are all around us. They may be your neighbors, friends, boss, date, spouse, relatives, or parent. They may be community leaders or professionals responsible for your education, money, health, or safety. And that is why we have to be particularly on guard. A note about terminology. Some readers may wonder why I chose to use non-clinical terms such as predator and emotionally unstable to describe 2 of the dangerous personalities in this book. This is a valid question. I wanted to use terms that lay people could understand immediately and that would transfer easily across cultures. It would have been very easy and perhaps beneficial for book sales, as some friends suggested, to use the term psychopath to describe the predator. Unfortunately, the term psychopath has become so overused that even some professionals use the term carelessly, when the more discerning would tell you that conduct disorder, sociopath, antisocial personality disorder, or as the World Health Organization prefers, dissocial personality disorder, would be more accurate or precise. The medical and mental health literature clearly differentiates between a psychopath, a sociopath, an individual with antisocial personality disorder, and an individual with conduct disorder. To label someone using those particular terms, one must be very aware of the specific criteria established by the mental health community or by researchers such as Robert Hare. As complex as this is for professionals, it is more so for the lay reader. That's why I decided to use the term predator, which encapsulates the fact that we are dealing with individuals who prey on others, take advantage of others, and have little regard for rules or for the rights and sanctity of others. Similarly, terms such as borderline personality, histrionic, conduct disorder, or bipolar disorder are a mystery to most people not familiar with the full clinical meaning of these terms. So I use the appellation emotionally unstable to encapsulate the essence of this personality so that the average person, and that includes me, can understand. I am also aware that some psychological terms, such as borderline or histrionic, have become so highly charged with negative meanings and connotations that they stigmatize or are used pejoratively while providing little clarity as to what is at issue. For these reasons, I avoided using those terms. Narcissistic and paranoid personality were used, however, because these terms are widely understood, thanks to their long pedigree in mythology and in literature. Evil, crime, or suffering comes at us in many ways, and rarely does it wave a flag or blow a whistle to say, "Get ready, I'm coming." In fact, from my own experience as an FBI special agent, I know that criminals are incredibly adept at getting close to us so they can take advantage. Dennis Rader, also known as the BTK Killer, hid in plain sight for 30 years. Living in Park City, Kansas, near Wichita, Rader was a church council leader and dog catcher compliance officer for the city. He was also a serial killer, at least 10 victims, who liked to bind, torture, and kill. Thus the BTK appellation. Something he kept secret from his wife and kids, as well as from city officials and his church for 3 decades. David Russell Williams, a decorated Canadian Forces colonel, also hid a secret from his wife and his fellow officers, that he was a serial rapist and killer. Or how about the scores of Catholic priests who for decades hid their crimes of child abuse under the robes of the clergy? It's cases like these that make us wonder, whom can we trust? How can we detect and avoid harm before it happens? In the end, we must rely on our own innate abilities to sense danger, our powers of observation, and the behaviors of others that alert us that something isn't right. Sometimes the only person making the key observations that may save you is you, sitting next to that odd or prickly person in a cubicle at work, or behind that closed door at home. Consider the 2013 case of Ariel Castro, who held, tortured, and raped 3 girls in his house for more than a decade, more than 3,600 days. Just think about that. Within hours of his arrest, neighbors spoke to news reporters of how bewildered they were, as Castro was known as a sunny face, someone who was good with children. One neighbor who lived 2 doors down and had known Castro for 22 years said, "I feel a little guilty. I should have spotted it." But what if those neighbors, family members, or his fellow musicians and band members, Castro played the guitar and sang, had been better observers? Most people, unfortunately, are simply not motivated to look closer. In fact, society frowns on meddling in other people's business, and frankly, most people simply don't know what to look for. Sadly, social blindness is the rule, not the exception. I don't want you to be victimized. I don't want you to go through what I have witnessed and what so many have suffered. I want you to have a happy, fulfilling life. But I know there are dangerous personalities out there, ever ready to torment you or take what you value. If you have any doubt, just read the newspaper and you'll know why we have to be prepared. Invariably, a person who has been victimized later asks, "How could this happen to me? Why didn't I see the signs? We've all experienced this, including me. While hindsight is 20/20, foresight is mostly blind. No one has taught us what to look for. We who work criminal cases know that there are almost always personality traits or behavioral cues that, to the informed, say, there are issues here, pay attention, beware, or get away. But either they weren't recognized or people chose to ignore them. This is where dangerous personalities comes in. I want to help you anticipate when someone is going to try to take advantage of you or hurt you. Safety is our responsibility. It cannot be outsourced. And if we try to do so, we'll be disappointed. Police departments are notoriously overburdened. Mental health clinics are swamped. The courts still let too many get away. And as already mentioned, the majority of those who do wrong rarely get caught. Thus, our safety is up to us. How nice it would be if we could just block these individuals out of our lives as easily as we do spam or pop-up messages on the internet with one click. But we can't. That means we have to be on guard. I want to share this information with you because we don't have experts at our side 24/7 to turn to and ask, "What do you think? Is he dangerous? Is he a good person? Can I trust her to care for my child? Should I invest with him? Should I let her be my roommate? Does this manager have the capacity to ruin my company? Should I bring him home and let him spend the night?" These decisions are our responsibility. Yet few of us are prepared to assess others properly in order to answer these questions. When we fail to answer them today, we may find the sad answer on the front page of tomorrow's newspaper. Now you can take an active role in ensuring your safety. Dangerous Personalities provides you with expert advice in a simple, practical way so that you can take control of your life. I want to help you learn how to assess others for flaws of character or personality to reduce the chance that you'll be taken advantage of emotionally, psychologically, financially, or physically. Benjamin Franklin said it best. An investment in knowledge pays the best interest. I would only add that an investment in this kind of knowledge may save your life. The Dangerous Personality Checklists. In the world where I worked, we never had the luxury of days or weeks to assess an individual. Decisions about whom to investigate, focus on, follow, question, confront, engage, or arrest had to be made quickly. After all, when you're negotiating with a kidnapper, you can't say, "Hang on a minute." We have to ask a committee of experts what your personality is really like so we know how to deal with you. It doesn't work that way. Real life happens in real time, and decisions have to be made in an instant. In crisis situations, our general knowledge of human behavior was critical, but so was the specific information we gradually collected as to how these dangerous personalities behaved. In time, as I studied and talked to these individuals, as well as to experts and to victims, their key features became formalized into checklists to help me assess these individuals in real time in the high-stakes situations we confronted daily in the FBI. What only a select few FBI criminal profilers previously knew, and what I myself used repeatedly and refined over the years, I will now share with you. Chapter by chapter, I'll describe the defining traits of each of the four personalities, how they behave, how they make us feel, and where and how we may encounter them, with examples from everyday life, my own crime files, and the headlines. I conclude each chapter with the Dangerous Personalities Checklist, specific to that personality type, describing key warning signs in plain language. The checklists include a practical, easy-to-use scoring system to help you gauge where this person's behaviors fall on a spectrum from mild to moderate to severe. In other words, from irritating to toxic to dangerous. The checklists will help you understand the following. The most common personality traits and behaviors that say proceed with caution. the traits, behaviors, or events that appear normal but that in fact communicate danger. What you can anticipate in the future from this individual. The possible threat level to you and those who associate with this individual. Each checklist is very specific and highly detailed, far more detailed, in fact, than those used by mental health professionals when diagnosing personality disorders. As you look at the checklists, you may wonder why they are so long. The answer is simple. Assessing for dangerous personalities is often complex and subtle. The checklists are lengthy because they need to be. Details ensure accuracy and help avoid the risk of overlooking meaningful or nuanced behaviors that the layperson may have forgotten or may not have realized are significant, but that are important in identifying a particular dangerous personality. When it comes to saving lives or keeping others safe, I have to consider what is useful to the widest readership and also what is necessary. Just as an experienced pilot uses a lengthy pre-flight and landing checklist to ensure maximum safety for all on board, so we must use comprehensive checklists to be as careful and as precise as we can. When it comes to dangerous personalities, detail and accuracy trump brevity and ambiguity. As you read this book and use the checklists, you will notice that unlike most books on the subject, there are very few statistics. There is, in my view, a valid reason for this. When we say that this or that personality type accounts for 1 or 6 or 2.8% of the population, I believe we're doing a disservice to readers by inviting them to focus on probabilities, statistics, rather than on behaviors. There's a risk that someone will say, well, I have a 96% chance of being safe, so I don't need to worry about dealing with that type of person. Many smokers delude themselves by focusing on the statistics relating to those who don't get lung cancer, rather than on the behaviors and lifestyle that lead to lung cancer. This mindset is precisely what we want to avoid. All it takes is one encounter with one dangerous personality. On the street, at work, in your car, in your house, in your bedroom, to completely ruin your life. Thus, in this book, we focus on behaviors, not on statistics or probabilities. I also know from the research. For more information, refer to the 5th edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, known as the DSM-5, that certain disorders are more often diagnosed or associated with a specific gender. Antisocial personality disorder, for instance, is more often diagnosed in males, while borderline personality disorder is more often diagnosed in females. These two disorders have many of the behavioral traits of the predator and the emotionally unstable personality, respectively, discussed in this book. For the same reason that it's inadvisable to focus too narrowly on statistics, it would be a mistake to associate one disorder or personality type with a specific gender. We don't want to be blinded by fixating on statistics or a gender bias. What we want to do is focus on behaviors. Behaviors overwhelmingly will define the dangerous personality type. An important caution. As you read this book, keep in mind that I am not a mental health professional, and this is not a diagnostic book. Clinical diagnosis is reserved for clinicians who have spent years training in the art and science of diagnosis using specific criteria established by the American Psychiatric Association. While professionals may find the material in this book helpful, this book is not meant to be used for diagnostic purposes. The checklists were designed as an assessment tool for those wanting to identify dangerous personalities or behaviors associated with dangerous personalities. Just as we prudently assess whom to allow into our homes or whom to employ, this book and these checklists likewise help us to be more thorough in our assessments of others. This is a descriptive book about how to identify dangerous personalities through their behaviors. It's also a book on how to protect yourself and your loved ones. There are many excellent books and resources on mental illness, abnormal psychology, and personality disorders, as well as their possible causes and treatment. This isn't one of them, and you should seek out those resources if that's the perspective you're looking for. This book is strictly from my perspective as a former FBI special agent who had to deal with these kinds of dangerous individuals on a frequent basis, either face-to-face as the target of my investigations or in consultations. My approach, therefore, is not from the healing arts. I leave that to mental health professionals. The selected resources and the bibliography offer a selection of valuable resources that draw from the healing arts, crisis centers, criminologists, law enforcement, and forensics, as well as insights from the victims themselves. I hope you'll explore these additional resources and continue to educate yourself long after you finish this book. I truly believe you're best served when you consider what many authors have to say rather than just one. Many other books explore why these personalities are the way they are. You will not find that focus here, for this reason. When someone takes pleasure in humiliating you on a daily basis, has cleaned out your bank account, has molested your child, or is choking you with a belt, does it really matter why that person is this way? The only thing that matters, because you are not a clinician or a researcher, is your safety and the well-being of those you love. During my decades in law enforcement, the more insight we had into a suspect's personality, the greater the probability we had of catching that individual or preventing further criminal acts. For example, in hostage situations, knowing whether we were dealing with someone who was primarily paranoid, a predator, a narcissist, or highly unstable could make a big difference in how we communicated with this person, how often, and by what means. It also helped us determine what actions might be taken to rescue the hostage. Knowing the individual's personality type gave us insight into the probable outcome of the situation, as personality traits often dictate the trajectory of how someone is likely to behave. Which is why we say, in behavioral analysis, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Or to quote a legendary thinker on human nature, we are what we repeatedly do. Aristotle. So if you seek to know the why of dangerous personalities, this is not the book for you. But if you want to know how they think and behave, if you want to protect yourself, your loved ones, or your business, then this is a good place to start. One last thought before we begin. While my training and personal philosophy dictate that everyone deserves to be treated ethically and with respect, I also believe that no one has a social obligation to be victimized. Let me repeat that. No one has a social obligation to be victimized. That's why I'm writing this book. I care about only one thing, your safety and well-being. I care about you, your children, your parents, or your grandparents not becoming victims. My goal is not to scare you, but to empower you. I want to sensitize you to these personalities so you can spot them before they can hurt you or those you love, and help you distance yourself if they're causing you harm. I want to help you develop your safety radar for detecting behaviors that signal caution. Be careful with this person. Slow down. Don't trust. The more we can do this as individuals, the better protected we'll be as a society. Then maybe the havoc wrought by the extremely dangerous personalities of the world can be contained long before they make headlines. If this book helps you identify and protect yourself from someone who can hurt you physically, emotionally, psychologically, or financially, then I have accomplished my goal. Chapter 1. It's All About Me. The Narcissistic Personality. Of all the labels that are carelessly bandied about, narcissist is probably one of the most overused and least understood. It's a popular term with ancient origins, the Greek myth of Narcissus, who fell in love with his reflection. Yet what it really means can be perplexing. Many people think of a narcissist as someone who perhaps names hotels after himself or always wants to be in the spotlight. Maybe a character on reality TV. Certainly plenty of people love the limelight, but the kind of narcissist we're talking about goes far beyond self-promotion by acting in ways that are toxic and dangerous. From this point forward, I will use the terms narcissist and narcissistic personality interchangeably. Narcissistic personalities care only for themselves, their needs, and their priorities. While you and I appreciate attention, the narcissist craves it and manipulates people and situations to get it. While you and I work hard to be successful, the narcissistic personality connives to succeed and may cheat, lie, embellish the truth, or scheme to get ahead, uncaring of how others are affected. These personalities can be found in every level of our society, right up to the top, where history's grim record shows that they've started wars and exterminated populations, but they're also found in the cubicle or on the bar stool next to you, at home, on the team, in the classroom, and even in your spiritual community. Cinderella, the classic tale of the cruel stepmother and stepsisters obsessed with themselves, epitomizes the exploitative nature of narcissism. These are people who live selfishly at others' expense. The most famous version of Cinderella is the Disney one, but historically there are more than 300 variants of this tale. Apparently many cultures have seen fit to warn us about this personality, and with good reason. Like Cinderella's stepmother and stepsisters, these personalities see few faults in themselves and view anyone who doesn't value them as highly as they value themselves as nobodies, to be denigrated or tormented. And while Disney's Cinderella enjoys a magical happy ending, in real life there's no fairy godmother or prince to save us from these bullies. When we're dealing with a narcissistic personality, our protection is up to us. The way of the narcissistic personality. Narcissism isn't the same as confidence. True confidence reflects admirable strength of character. The narcissist's confidence is really arrogance, a character flaw leading to grandiose ideas and the relentless pursuit of the narcissist's desires, often at others' expense. Some grandiose ideas can be good for society. Look at the advances that came from Edison's vision of a world powered by electricity, and Kennedy's mission to land on the moon, to name just two. Walt Disney, too, had a grandiose idea, a magical place for children and adults to enjoy themselves, which would become Disneyland, Disney World, and Epcot. The narcissist's grandiosity is entirely different. Consider Jim Jones, whose vision for Jonestown in Guyana was to create a place where people would pay tribute to him as a supreme individual. The price of admission? Your life savings and your free will. You also had to be willing to kill your own children and yourself by drinking cyanide-laced Kool-Aid, along with more than 900 other followers. In the first instance, a grandiose idea leads to a place where we can fulfill our dreams. In the other, our worst dreams are fulfilled. The difference isn't one of ideas, but of personality type and character flaws. One seeks happiness for all. The other seeks adoration and happiness only for himself. This is why I want to warn you about the defining traits of this dangerous personality. Egocentric. As children, we all go through a phase where we feel we're the center of the world, with a high sense of entitlement. Narcissistic personalities essentially never outgrow this phase. Their childlike need to be constantly attended to leads them to do everything from the ridiculous to the unthinkable to be the center of attention, or to get their way. They'll arrive late to meetings, parties, and family events, delaying activities, making others wait, and even make sacrifices on their behalf. They may storm in or make dramatic entrances just to get everyone's attention. They have no hesitation about letting you know they're the smartest person in the room, Some are shameless name-droppers, habitually mentioning whom they know, whom they lunched with, and on, making sure you know that they associate with important people. Looking good in every sense is vital to narcissists. You may see them preening in mirrors. They're highly aware of their physical appearance, which can lead to fitness or cosmetic surgery fanaticism, and use their presence to have an impact on others, whether it's making sure all heads turn at a party or ensuring everyone sees they've got the best, biggest, or most expensive everything. Some narcissistic personalities present themselves as being very accomplished, but in fact they've accomplished little, which doesn't stop them from acting superior and seeing themselves as a great inventor, artist, musician, thinker, leader, or singer. When things don't go their way, they blame everyone but themselves. Maybe these individuals made mistakes, are incompetent, or just aren't well-liked, but you'll never hear that from them. No, the system, society, the boss, the professor, the electorate, the world is against them. We simply fail to see how great they are. When others don't treat narcissists as the special person they deem themselves to be, their reaction is infantile rage that ranges from sulking to whining to seething, and sometimes to violence. They can berate and blame with impunity, hold grudges, and be vengeful. That is their nature. Overvalues self, devalues others. Because they see themselves as special and unique, narcissistic personalities tend to see everyone else as either marginal or inferior. They become masters at putting others down in order to elevate themselves. They are the bullies of the world. That's how businesswoman and hotelier Leona Helmsley got the moniker the Queen of Mean. But she wasn't just mean. She was by all accounts a bully toward anyone she deemed below her. No different from the kind of bullying we see today in schools. If bullying seems to be on the rise, and the consequences of bullying, absenteeism, depression, anxiety, suicide, are becoming ever more dramatic and extreme, it is no accident. Many clinicians are of the opinion that as narcissism has increased in the general population, so has bullying, which is a common characteristic of the narcissistic personality. It seems persistent bullying and narcissism go hand in hand. These days, the narcissistic personality doesn't even have to be with you to bring you down. On September 9, 2013, 12-year-old Rebecca Sedgwick jumped to her death from an abandoned cement plant in Polk County, Florida, allegedly as a result of being tormented online, cyberbullied. This is what can happen when people consistently overvalue themselves and devalue others, a common narcissistic trait. Narcissistic personalities have an uncanny ability to identify weakness or insecurity in others and use it to put others down or make themselves look better. It may be something as subtle as noticing your new watch and then calling attention to their much more expensive one. At a cookout, they'll say things like, "No steaks, only hamburgers," loudly enough for all your guests to hear. They don't care how you feel, they thrive by belittling others. They are the kind who, sensing someone's nervousness before giving a speech, would say, "Must be tough to follow a great speaker. I wouldn't want to be in your shoes." I know because this happened to me right before speaking to a group in New Orleans. Sometimes these personalities betray their true nature by berating their spouses or children in public, at social occasions, or at kids' sporting events. If this is what they do in public, imagine what they do at home when outsiders aren't looking. Or they'll make contemptuous comments with caustic indifference about how stupid or incompetent somebody is. They'll bark commands at a passing waiter for service and then turn to you with a smile, as if nothing happened. At an event I attended years ago in Las Vegas, a speaker screamed at the hotel staff in front of about 150 attendees, "I didn't come all this way to look like a fool. Fix it," when the microphone stopped working. Everyone's jaw dropped. Such behavior should serve as telltale clues to all who see or receive such treatment that they are in the presence of a narcissistic personality. Instead of empathy, you'll find arrogance and entitlement. A person who feels superior to others will have limited ability to empathize. While most of us learn as children how to understand others' feelings and how our actions affect others, with these personalities, sympathy or understanding for your situation and feelings is limited or non-existent. You could be in crisis, and somehow you still won't be the center of attention because nothing must detract from the needs, wants, and desires of narcissists. You may have a sick child you need to attend to, but they still want you to take them shopping at the mall. In fact, narcissistic personalities view revelations about needs, illness, or mistakes as weaknesses in others that confirm their superiority and justify their devaluing behaviors. Some narcissists telegraph their arrogance and haughtiness. It's palatable in how they speak, react, or even carry themselves. Others recognize the need to at least appear to be empathetic. Their empathy, however, has an agenda, such as when a boss calls you at home when you're sick to ask how you're feeling, but is only really concerned with when you're coming back to work. It may seem as if they care until you discover how superficial and infrequent their interest in your life and well-being actually is, except when it affects them. Still others betray their hypervaluation of themselves only when there is a crisis. Then their egocentric perspective on the world percolates to the surface. On April 20, 2010, BP's Deepwater Horizon oil rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico, killing 11 rig workers and causing the largest accidental marine oil spill in the history of the petroleum industry, or the world for that matter. About the disaster and its effects on others, Anthony Tony Hayward, BP CEO, remarked to a reporter on May 30th, "We're sorry for the massive disruption it's caused to their lives. There's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. I'd like my life back." The term jaw-dropping would apply here. We're talking about an environmental disaster of historic proportions coupled with the deaths of 11 humans, and he wants his life back. Sometimes it takes a crisis to reveal those narcissistic traits that say, "Nothing is more important than me." The more you talk to narcissistic personalities, the more you get the sense that they don't care about you. They're not very inquisitive about you. What they really want is for you to pay attention to them and to their needs and desires, or to do their bidding. But because they're hyper-aware of how they appear to others, they can, in many cases, modulate and moderate their behavior to control how they're perceived. They can do this for a while, but in the end, their true sentiments will come out. Narcissists act nice to get their way, not to express true caring. In the movie Goodfellas, rising mobster Henry Hill, played by Ray Liotta, uses attentiveness to court Karen, his future wife, treating her to great restaurants, front row seats, the best food, the best wine, no waiting in line. She is the focus of his total attention. Once they're married, boom, it's over. The narcissist worked for and got what he wanted. So what's the problem when he comes home drunk, smelling of other women? What his wife wants doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is what he feels he's entitled to. He has used attentiveness to ensnare, but he doesn't really care. In real life, financier Bernard Madoff used connections and friendships to ensnare trusting people in his Ponzi scheme. The crushing difference between what they expected and what they got is the terrible truth of relationships with a narcissistic personality. You expect to be treated as an equal, as a friend, but a narcissist has no equal. For the narcissistic personality, friends are functional. They serve a purpose, to provide the narcissist with something wanted or needed. The most dangerous narcissists are those whose utter lack of empathy and high levels of grandiosity verge on psychopathy, the ability to do harm without remorse. They have no conscience. and will exploit others emotionally, financially, and sometimes physically. If you please them, you are convenient. If you displease them, you're more than an inconvenience. You're something they must debase, or perhaps destroy. When we read about a parent who incarcerates, abandons, or murders his or her own baby so that the parent can have a good time and party, what we're dealing with, first and foremost, is a narcissistic personality, someone who overvalues himself or herself and devalues others with reptilian indifference. That reptilian indifference is what we see in major cities and elsewhere in the phenomenon known as knockout assaults, in which the unsuspecting, including elderly women, are targeted for a blindingly fast punch without provocation, just to see if the person can be knocked out, usually causing a concussion with a single hit. To behave with such callousness, one has to be able to devalue others, a trait the narcissistic personality has in abundance. Takes shortcuts, bends rules, violates boundaries. Because they feel entitled, narcissistic personalities may feel they don't have to work as hard as others, that they can take shortcuts to get what they want, or that the rules don't apply to them. This is how you end up with politicians who have affairs, father children, and attempt to deny their paternity. Former U.S. Senator John Edwards. Turn public funds into their own private piggy bank. Former U.S. Representative Jesse Jackson Jr., or are willing to sell political favors for a price. Former Governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich. One executive told me about hiring a manager who was fairly successful, but who then suddenly started flirting with his female co-workers. It was as if he just couldn't help himself with the sexual overtures. Every employee knew such behavior was not tolerated, but when he was confronted, he was enraged, maintaining that nothing in his behavior violated the terms of his contract and that he was merely being friendly. Remember, narcissists don't see that they're doing anything wrong. They feel entitled. They just get angry that someone's pointing out their inappropriate behavior. Some create fictions about themselves to feed their need for recognition. For example, they'll say they're a decorated Navy SEAL, but they've never even served in the armed forces. And of course, convincing proof is never available because their work is a secret. It's bad enough when someone pretends to be a military hero, an affront to all who served, but when someone pretends to be a doctor, pilot, or other professional, and people trust that person with their health, life, or savings, that is perhaps the ultimate betrayal of trust and ethics. Such violations undermine society, and in my experience are most often committed by the narcissistic personality. The narcissistic personality is quite gifted at bamboozling and conning others. This is exactly what Christian Karl Gerhardsreiter, a German immigrant, did, passing himself off as Clark Rockefeller, a member of the iconic Rockefeller family. He ended up marrying Sandra Boss, a respected businesswoman, and having a baby with her. When she discovered all his lies and sought a divorce, he kidnapped their child. Who could do such a thing? An unaccomplished, narcissistic personality seeking to be recognized, that's who. I remember when a woman named Sarah, a widow, came to the FBI seeking our aid. I was assigned to interview her, as there might have been possible interstate issues involving fraud, which is a federal offense. Sarah had just paid for her third and last child to finish college. With more free time, she turned her attention to a charismatic preacher who had recently established himself in town. She was captivated by his devoutness, his knowledge of so many things, and how easily he made friends. His attentions led her to assist his spiritual labors to build up his church, committing almost $30,000 that she had saved. But after she handed over the money, the preacher vanished. I talked to Sarah 3 years after this happened, and she was still stinging from this financial calamity. She had lost most of her savings, and her children were upset that she'd fallen for this grifter, as other elderly women had done. But equally heartbreaking was her revelation to me that she had lost her spirituality and trust in others. With their boundless sense of self-importance, narcissistic personalities lack clear boundaries. They push the envelope with people, laws, rules, and social norms. As social puppeteers, they view others as extensions of themselves, commanding, directing,